Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with my co-pilot, Kyle. And today, we're going to be talking part 7 of the Apple TV Plus limited series, Masters of the Air. Before we get started, a couple housekeeping items. As always, I do want to reroute you over to BingetownTV.com. That will have our entire library of backdated episodes. We cover a million shows besides Masters of the Air. Usually it's sci-fi fantasy. That is our vibe. But clearly we're covering World War II, a little period piece here. So we kind of just get into whatever we want. And again, you can find that all over on BingetownTV.com. Kyle and I personally are currently covering Avatar The Last Airbender, the live action remake on Netflix. And we're giving the good with the bad on that. Kyle is also covering Solo Leveling, which I actually heard just had the lowest rated episode in Crunchyroll history because they surprised them with the filler episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Surprise is a tough word because they told us about it. But yeah, unnecessary recap filler in the middle of the season.
You hate to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe take this week off. Just kidding. You should. Are you guys even going to cover that?
No, heck no.
Cool. Well, Solo Leveling took the week off then, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. But next week, they will be back with a vengeance. I hear that's been a great show so far. And we are also covering Shogun over on FX, which I still got to watch those first two episodes because I'm hearing great things. So we got a lot going on. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But we got a lot going on. You can find it all over on BingetownTV.com. So why don't we get into this part 7 of Masters of the Air? I gotta be honest, this might be my least favorite episode of the series so far. I think part 6 was also a little bit slow, and then part 7 continued with the slowness. We did get another air mission, but I didn't feel kind of that same intensity as maybe the Regensburg or the Munster mission or really any other time that we were in the air. I don't think it lasted as long. I don't really know why it didn't hit the same. It's still a great story. I mean, this show, as we've said, has established there is kind of a bar, and it still kind of hit that bar in terms of quality and acting, et cetera, et cetera. But this one was maybe just a little bit slower, and the tone felt different because for the first time, we're really highlighting that POW storyline. So it's just seeing some of the familiar faces that we've come to love in some very different circumstances. So, Kyle, what are you thinking?
Yeah, the phrase I was seeing on the internet was a bridge episode. Mm-hmm. I guess I agree with. We have two episodes left. We know, well, maybe not know, but we assume and make a very educated guess that they are going to hit really hard and be quite intense and all of those things. So it seems like they're getting us to D-Day. They're moving the timeline to where it needs to be and things like that. But yeah, I mean, clearly slower, less action heavy, all those types of things compared to all the other episodes. But I mean, it's still enjoyable television.
And going off of that, you're saying they're trying to get us to D-Day, the invasion. The series did skip over what I'm understanding to be considered a pretty noteworthy mission for the 100th that became known as Black Thursday. And that was actually flown on October 14th, 1943. Which would have actually been 4 days after the catastrophic Munster mission. So I think I alluded to it two episodes ago. Oh, you thought Munster was bad. I hear next week is even worse. The show did decide to skip over that mission. It was noteworthy. It had to have been more than just the 100th because I'm seeing 60 B-17s went down in a single day, which is 600 airmen.
Yeah, wow.
Yep, that math is correct. 600 airmen there. So it was just another mission to a ball bearing factory in Schweinfurt. I'm reading it because that's what they're hitting, no matter how many losses. And I just wanted to bring it up because the show made a conscious decision to skip it. The one article I read said, hey, it kind of makes sense because it was kind of a similar mission when you compare it to Regensburg and Munster. However, it didn't have kind of the noteworthy uniqueness that Regensburg did because their destination was Africa. That was very unique. And then Munster, you know, John Egan went down and became POW, and Rosie had that solo return to base. So those were a little bit more unique. So I think they just omitted just another catastrophic failure and a lot of loss to give the series as a whole a little bit of a lighter tone, because if we had another episode like that, audiences might get a little sad, which, yeah. You know, again, it's the Bloody 100th. This is their story, but I wanted to make sure that we didn't skip over that mission because it was noteworthy in the grand scheme.
Well, that's good. I appreciate you mentioning that.
Absolutely. So aside from that doom and gloom of Black Thursday, which was a very real event that happened, we do kind of have an episode here that is revolving around Hope, and we have two separate buckets or storylines. The Hope at Thorpe Abbott through the POV of Craws and Rosie is nearing his 25th mission. The whole base can feel it. It's palpable. And all the while, they're acknowledging that the invasion of the mainland is imminent, and that means that they are just constantly being forced on these missions. And as we see, the 100th is starting to bomb Berlin, of all places. So deeper into enemy territory, they got a lot of new faces coming in. And then, of course, at the Stalag, everybody's just trying to get through it. Buck and Bucky is really our point of view there. Yeah, those are our two buckets.
It's... Hope is an interesting thing to think about, too, in the context of those storylines, because it's almost forcing yourself to find hope any way you can versus there like actually being a general feeling of hope, especially at Thorpe Abbott. It feels like everyone's like, this fucking sucks, you know, type of deal. And the Rosie thing is, like you're saying, is what is giving that hope type of deal. And same thing at the POW camp. You have to, I guess, in some way, find something that's not just 24/7 doom and gloom.
Yeah, so why don't we start with that POW camp storyline? We begin with a Craws narration that pretty much tells the audience, hey, you know, it sucked. It was cold and they're eating nothing but potatoes and radishes year round. But since Stalag Luft 3 was being controlled by the Luftwaffe, which is the German Air Forces, they treated the prisoners humanely because they knew that the Brits and the Americans had their downed pilots as well. So they had access to hygiene, music, basic amenities. It was a POW camp, but the emphasis is they were being treated humanely, at least for now. That illusion starts to kind of waver as we get through this episode, but I guess they give us a cool kind of get your bearings here as people are trying to coax a little cat from under the bunkers, and then they're eating soup in the next scene and the dude's vomiting. So again, it is not a pleasant existence, but
do you know why he was vomiting?
Was he allergic to cat?
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was, I don't want to say necessarily shocking, but I, as you know, a cat dad, a step cat dad to two cats. I was like, damn.
Oh, you think it was his moral confliction with hearing that he ate a dad?
Ate a cat.
Excuse me. Okay.
But, yeah, that's what I took it as. Him realizing, like, oh my God, we're eating a cat. But
yeah, either way. I mean, one of the men says it's protein. Try and keep it down if you can. And at that point, yeah, why the hell not?
Yeah, yeah.
But Buck kind of rallies the troops and says, hey, come on, it's almost time for news. And we get kind of this MacGyver together radio situation that the boys are doing just to get any parcel of news that they can. And like I said, this whole episode to me revolves around hope. They are just hoping for news that the Allies are advancing. Any nugget of information that might suggest people are getting closer to them being freed from these POW camps. I think the one news update we get is that the Brits tried to attack Monte Cassino, which is in Italy, I believe, and they got pushed back by the Germans, and the Germans sent 10 divisions to the Americans in Anzio. And I think there was an update from the Japanese front in Burma, if I'm not mistaken. But that's really all we get there.
Yeah, it was a nice little setup to have, I'm sure, throughout Army training and all the different backgrounds that you have. There's people that know things, and everyone has their own little skill set and knowledge to be able to contribute in this way. It's just interesting to see them all kind of fall into, like, you know, they have their roles, and obviously they're still in the Army, so they're still treating Buck and Bucky, as we see later on, as like the majors and their commanding officers and all that kind of stuff. So the discipline itself isn't completely breaking down.
Definitely. And I think Crank even says Brass is coming in, and who is clearly the leader of the Americans there, walks in, still has his cap on, and asks for the breakdown to distribute it to everyone. So absolutely, that discipline is still instilled in them. But I think it's later that night, whatever, the Germans get everybody out into the yard, and they conduct a search of the barracks, whatever you want to call them. And they do find not the headpiece they had been using, but the actual guts of the radio, I guess, hidden in a table leg. This whole episode was just kind of cool to see the society that has formed in a POW camp, just like the shit that they can get their hands on to even possibly make a radio or something, how they hide it, just kind of prisoner ingenuity. I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it gets taken away here. And then what Bucky sends Buck on, like, pretty much gives him a grocery list and is like, hey, I need these things. And those scenes were cool too, of watching Buck get those things, or Bucky rather. But what was I just going to say? I don't remember. Oh, the search, it was like, they weren't expecting it. I just like how they're like eating all of the news note that they had written to distribute.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And then they get done in because they forgot to put the nail back through the wood, which was just like an unfortunate mistake. Cause you see later on that the guy like pulls the one nail out from under, and it, like, the thing drops from underneath his table and he pulls out. It seemed like all they needed to do was just push that nail in, but they were in such a rush that they forgot it.
Yeah. I didn't know if that was intentional, that the nail gave them a thing to, well, for next time, they should definitely nail that bitch in.
For next time.
Next time. Yeah, let's continue on here. Like you said, Buck sends Bucky to get a grocery list of items so that he can try and put together a radio like he did back home.
Good old Wyoming boy.
Yeah, little Wyoming boy. And there are a couple scenes that happen. Number one is the prisoners hear an air raid and they're like, holy crap, that's got to be close. And they surmise that bombing attacks are starting to take place in Berlin, which, that's got to be a positive for them if we're starting to get our claws into Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And then go ahead.
No, I was just going to, you mentioned the personal hygiene in the Kraz narration voiceover, and we get the look at the personal hygiene, which is as bare bones as it could possibly be. It looks like they're, I couldn't tell if they were scraping soap out of between the cracks of things, or if that was like material they were collecting for something, some other reason. But they're literally just have rags with water running, and they're just cleaning their crevices that way, standing up fully clothed next to each other. So I guess they're given the opportunity, but the opportunity itself was, just enough, I guess you could say.
Well, they are prisoners, so take what you can get. But as the air raids are going on, they hear gunshots in the yard, and it seems as though they're putting together the guard may have been trigger happy. They're denying it, just saying, get him to a doctor. But as the Americans come out and are like, what the hell happened? You're just shooting him for no reason. One of them releases a dog. I mean, tensions are just growing high. You got grown men being imprisoned.
Yeah,
this is inevitable, this behavior.
No, for sure. For sure. And I forget the name of the guy, but you just see how much it's wearing on Bucky in particular.
Yeah.
He is really upset about all this, and he starts to get into the escape talk and all of that. Because we know his personality is not one to be caged in any sense, and him physically being caged in this sense is obviously eating away at him so much.
I did appreciate how in pretty much every scene they did make Buck still just that cool, calm, collected leader presence. I think someone like hails Buck over when the guard shot the American. So he's still assuming that Buck role, even though it is in the POW camp.
Yeah.
Moving along, Bucky gets all the supplies. Like you said, that was a cool scene with the trapdoor, et cetera. Seems like he's able to make the radio, but it doesn't wind up working on the first attempt. Between this and the scene where it does wind up working, we get a mail call. He gets his letter from Marge. Yeah. So Marge is still a thing.
And that just adds on to Bucky's kind of, I don't want to say desire to leave or his feelings of being caged, but it's clearly wearing on him just this entire experience, while some of these other guys have that level of outlet from the mail. I'm so interested in the mail process at the POW camp.
They said the Red Cross was having issues getting them in, so I'm assuming that, you know, I have no clue. I'm not even sure if the names of POWs are communicated across lines so that they even know, okay, they're in a POW camp at least, and maybe the Red Cross takes letters of known POWs from Thorpe Abbott. I have no idea, but yeah. I can imagine it's very easy to get a letter into a POW camp.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, it's not like they're rerouting the letters from Thorpe Abbott and, you know, there's guys at Thorpe Abbott being like, oh, this is for Buck. We know where he is and just send it, because it doesn't seem like they know where he is at Thorpe Abbott. Yeah. Or at the very least, they're not talking about any of the POWs. So I was just interested in how that process would even begin to go down.
We talked earlier about just the mail logistics, the mail, overall at this time in the world in the 40s during World War II, but
the wonders of mail.
Yeah, so like you said, this is wearing on Bucky, and he even says, oh man, you're getting letters from Marge. Maybe I didn't set that part of it up right before I left. And that's a good kind of nod to our opening scene of the series as a whole, where they're kind of saying goodbye to their sweethearts. And you can tell Marge and Buck have a thing going, and Bucky's just there having his last hurrah.
It's also interesting in a, I guess, potentially morbid way when he says, like, they'll only know this me. They won't know the me before all of this. And I can't imagine how common of a thought that was, even for people who had somebody just, or didn't, just with your family, like, you know, your parents, your siblings, friends, like, just obviously this experience would change you so much. And obviously you're at a prisoner of war camp. You pretty much have nothing to do but think. I'm sure that thought weighed on a ton of people. Like, what is it going to be like if I get back home?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. That was well said. There's no way you come back the same person that you left as. So
yeah, I like that they included that line, because then it just made me think.
I agree. This was definitely a different side to Bucky. We've seen this kind of whole episode. But I'd be remiss if we skipped over the scene where they're just gossiping by the window by moonlight. Just, oh, I asked her to propose. That's great. Congrats. Will you be my best man? Absolutely, I will. So just Buck and Bucky broing down in the POW camp.
Now, I'm not so familiar with marriage customs in wartime, but what do you think about the move of proposing via letter while you know you're actively engaging in combat missions on the, you know, a potentially week to week basis? It seems a little wild to me, but
I mean, I don't know how to respond to that. It's a hell of a move by Buck. And I guess the ball is then in the woman who is back home waiting for this guy to just come back alive. I don't know. That's
interesting.
That is just interesting. Absolutely. Worth a comment, though.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking when I was like, damn, he just threw it in a letter and then just had to get up in a plane and keep going while you wait for the response, too. And then she's thinking about it after she sends her response, waiting for you to get it. It's just an interesting thing to think.
It's one of those things I can't even imagine being in that situation. No,
not at all.
All right.
The story, though.
It is quite the story, especially knowing that Buck does make it out.
Yeah.
I'm like 99% sure based on the comments I've read. So, again, like I said, Buck does get his radio to work. He gets the BBC. And I think he just hears the news that Berlin got hit hard, pretty much confirming what they were speculating about the bomb raids that they were hearing. And the next scene we get is that prison break scene where we see Germans all spilling into the yard. And Bucky has kind of talked to Buck about escaping. And this scene all kind of goes together you know, the Germans go into the yard, they're searching in the night, freaking out. And then we find out about 70 or 80 British people made three tunnels 30 feet deep and escaped. And, you know, the guy, quote, the brass American prisoner we were talking about said, hey, we're going to want to expect some extreme reprisals as this gets trickled up the totem pole and more officers in the German military find out about it.
Yeah, you'd have to be happy for them that they got out. But I feel like there might be a little part of you that's like, damn, now we just have to wait and see what they do to us, basically, type of deal.
Well, if you were happy to hear that they escaped, all right, you would not be happy to hear that about 50 of them got caught immediately and executed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting that I guess they identified leaders in the POW camp and kind of summoned them to the new warden's office. Obviously, Captain von Lindeiner was relieved of his duties. So now we're dealing with Simulet, someone German. And yeah, so he's essentially just
their military ranks, because like we said, the discipline is still there. It seems like they know how to call people of the major and plus rank. It's what it seemed like to me, at least.
Simulet, that
yes.
Word.
Well, when you said they identified leaders, I think it's more that they're just are people of higher military rank.
Yeah, that's totally true. Actually, I didn't even think about that, though I digress. So 50 people were found and executed, and there's this cool scene where the new warden is trying to be like, yeah, I'm getting word that we want to start taking account of all the Jews in the POW camps. And, you know, our American officer standing up says there's only Americans here. Love and respect the guy. But this guy is threatening, hey, there's been talk maybe the Luftwaffe isn't doing a good enough job and maybe the Gestapo and the SS should be taking control of these stalags. So that's really the only threat he's got. Again, do you call his bluff and just know that they don't have the resources to be mixing around POW camps and who's controlling them? I don't know.
I don't think you would. That's at least the way I'm taking it. This is the second time too we've seen the Luftwaffe use the SS and the Gestapo as a threat. You know, of this like good cop, bad cop type of deal. So just wanted to make note of that. Yeah, apparently this prison escape was the subject of the fairly famous movie in 1963, The Great Escape. I saw some people that were a little upset that we didn't get more information or detail about it in this episode. But it's kind of tough. It doesn't seem like the characters who were actually following were involved in it at all. So it seems like this was their experience with it type of deal. So that's why we're getting this type of experience with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Honestly, I'm just glad that they included it at all personally. But that, I believe, is our last scene in the POW camp. Anything else for that storyline, Kyle?
No, I'm just so interested in how the next two episodes go. My assumption here, again, because we don't really know the exact history of things, it feels too like movie-esque that they break out, you know, but is it really just they eventually get rescued from the camp after we push further into Europe? I mean, they're still pretty deep into Germany, so even if to D-Day, there's still some time between that being fortunately successful and liberating Berlin and the areas like that, so just, I have no idea where this story is going to go.
Well, they walk out of that meeting essentially like, okay, so clearly we're going to be getting punished for their escape attempt. And Buck actually says, hey, the more I think about it, you might have been right. We should have tried our luck to escape. And Bucky has flipped his side and was like, the more I think about it, I'm just trying to get through it. Keep our heads down. Let's try and get home in one piece. So that's kind of where we leave that storyline.
Yeah, the only thing I can assume is we're going to have tension along those lines between different groups. I'm assuming that each individual will have their own opinion of that, and maybe we'll get discussions, arguments, etc. So that's the only thing I'm confident in, quote unquote, predicting, but the rest of it, I have no idea.
Yeah, you know, I'm not really sure how much time I'm expecting to even spend in the POW camp going forward. Yeah, that's really all I have to say about that. I'm not sure how much more there is to tell of that story, but you know, we'll see.
Rosie's kind of got us hunkered down in the air, so he's covering that storyline, him and Kraz. So
yeah, and let's get into that storyline. So we start, as always, with a Kraz narration, just saying, hey, it was understood even by early in 1944 that the invasion of Europe was on the horizon. The longer this stuff dragged on, the more missions into Germany we had, the more casualties we were sustaining, which meant the more replacements with less experience were coming in, and the cycle repeats anew. And he goes to some of the more seasoned guys at the base were hesitant even to strike up a friendship and reach an arm out to the new recruits, just knowing that they in reality would not be there very long. And that takes us to Rosie, who was the guy that had to step up. And there's this scene where he's kind of introducing himself to new recruits and showing them the ropes. And in the same scene, we get some closure on the storyline that you and I were hoping for, and Quinn and Bailey arrived back at base.
What are your thoughts on this, that we're just riding bicycles and going home?
Well, I mean, I would have liked to see maybe another episode where they had a point of view and maybe more of their journey through Germany, but at the end of the day, this show is Masters in the Air. I guess that's not the focus of the story, is following them coming back home. So I was glad to get the closure, and I was pretty glad for them that it was a happy ending.
I agree with that. Yeah, it just would have been nice to see additional parts. Maybe it wasn't so glamorous. Maybe it was fairly bureaucratic after they got to a certain point. It was just kind of checkpoints and things like that. So
yeah,
I could see them deciding that this storyline, they probably filmed things for it, and that is what ended up on the cutting room floor when they had to condense things down into these 9 episodes. Not mad about that aspect of it. It was just kind of interesting. Like, oh my God, we're back here. They're just riding bikes. It was just kind of jarring from the last time we saw them. But it was interesting that they had that, let's say, procedure where downed pilots that came back weren't allowed to fly again because they were so in the know. Yeah, it's just, I wasn't expecting that. And once they said it, I was like, that is interesting, and has a lot of logic to it.
Well, this closure to this storyline worked in the context of this episode, because he's kind of saying every once in a while, even though the general vibe was doom and gloom at Thorpe Abbott, something would come along that would just shake the entire base and kind of lift everyone's morale, such as Quinn and Bailey seemingly coming back from the death. That would be miraculous, something like that happening. And then that brings us to the other beacon of hope, if you will, and that would be Rosie is drawing ever nearer to his 25th mission, which this had me on the edge of my seat, just this whole storyline. And then when we find out number 25 is going to be to Berlin, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Well, it was good. Let's say it's a good connection too, because the first time we meet Rosie is them saying, Pappy, I believe, is who says it, like, this ain't good for us. So the fact that we're throwing this big of a shindig for someone who gets to 25 missions, and now they're going on to their 25th, it was a nice little full circle moment.
Yeah, I agree. And some quick scenes where Kraz and Rosie are just talking about that, and Kraz is lamenting the fact that now that he's in operations, he will never get his chance to achieve 25. But at the same time, that means he doesn't have to go in the air at all. So come on, man, that's kind of a humble brag. And then I just like the scene where some of the new recruits are literally just oogling at Rosie and are just like, oh, I heard like 13 ships went out, he was the only one back. And Major Kidd is there to be like, it was actually 15, and Rosie is the best damn pilot I've ever seen fly a B-17. So you better hope that you're half as good as Sam. I just like the respect that he put on.
Yeah. No, that was fantastic. It was nice. If you even want to call it feel good moment, it's just nice to see Rosie get his flowers.
Absolutely. Rosie get his flowers.
Because he's been fantastic.
Absolutely. So like I said, the missions are piling up, as Kraz will tell us in his narration, and then the men found out they were going to start hitting Berlin, and everybody just held their breath because, come on. And we don't see the first mission to Berlin, I guess. I kind of assumed that we got this from two POVs off screen and that the mission that we see the planes come back to Thorpe Abbott and they lost like 15 B-17s was the same mission where they were bombing and the prisoners heard it.
Yeah. Because, they, you know, and they do say, we didn't mention it in the POW camp. Someone asks, like, do you think the 100 was involved? And they're like, yeah, heck yeah.
I don't know if those timelines match up, but that's kind of how I took it. And that made it fun for me. Hopefully it makes it fun for you.
Yeah. And this was, they dubbed that mission Black Monday, right? In the show here.
Which one is Black Monday? Yes.
It was one that Rosie wasn't on.
Yep. March 6th, 1944 became known as Black Monday. 150 airmen lost from the 100th alone. And that would line up because they lost 15 B-17s. I actually heard them counting them out, one, two, and they got up to 16. I'm like, oh, that's not that bad. And they're like, that means half gone. I was like, oh.
I had the same exact reaction. It kept going higher. We got like every face that we know was counting and it was giving us like three or four numbers. And I was like, okay, we're getting up there. We're getting up there. And
then, I really thought that was an uplifting scene until it wasn't. But that just goes to show, because the last like two or three missions we've went on, we've only had like 20 planes available to us. So, you know, that's those true. Percentages didn't seem too bad. But yeah, Black Monday, 150 men from the 100th dead. And in interrogation, they're just recalling, you know, one plane went straight up, evasive maneuvers in the high element, and then it just nosedived. And the highlight at this interrogation is that the Germans were starting to target parachuting men out of their planes. So,
terrifying.
Well, yeah, absolutely terrifying, but also maybe a change in mentality. The Allies are starting to actually hit you at home where it hurts, and they are not holding any more punches at this point. Who knows? Yeah. But that was definitely a highlight here.
Yeah, it does seem like a, I don't want to say an interesting break or a change, but there has been, like we mentioned earlier, this concept of like the Luftwaffe is this kind of good cop-ish to the more bad copy elements of the Nazi war machine. And this feels, again, not like a break from that, but it seemed like there was this kind of general, I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. It's not like a level of honor. It just feels like that's like a new level we've achieved now of just like barbaricness in the war in the air.
There was maybe a mutual respect for a certain, like, now I can't think of the term.
Yeah, right. I have the feeling of what I'm trying to say, but we don't do that. Like, you know, we don't do that, but now we're doing that.
And both sides kind of an unspoken agreement, perhaps.
Let's say that, yeah. At least that's the way it felt. I don't know if that was a thing, but clearly it ain't a thing anymore.
Clearly it ain't a thing anymore. And that takes us to another Cross narration where he said the men needed a distraction, you know, and it's, we see men drink and Cross finds his distraction with Sandra.
Yep.
It's one of those things. My current stance is cheating is one of the worst things you can do to someone, but I've also never been across an ocean at war, never know what the deal is. So
yeah. Yeah. I think it's just the right way to say this. He explains himself quite well. And like you're saying, it just feels like such a product of not only the time, but just this situation itself, especially. I was shocked to see her again. I just assumed, honestly, she was one episode character.
We did talk about that, and I want to pat myself on the back. I was like, well, you don't know which way Cross is going to go. Maybe I just thought that, and I'm trying to give myself a parade. Yeah, I mean,
We do have the tapes. We could check.
Someone fact check me, please. And thank you.
Yeah.
So we do get Sandra again, and that brings us to Cross back at Thorpe Abbott just writing letters, because he has taken it upon himself to handwrite letters to the families of fallen soldiers, and it's getting to him. It just, everything is getting to him, which Cross always seemed to be one of the more positive guys, and you just see him, I don't know, dragging his feet.
Yeah.
And kid comes and slaps down another folder that says, hey, we're going back to Berlin again. Same mission tomorrow. As last time. Tomorrow.
Literally,
yeah.
Tomorrow. Yeah.
And yeah, he's just like, come on.
I know. And they know too that he's trying to write all these letters. It seems, I couldn't tell if they were making a comment that he was like working slower because of it or not.
I don't think so. I didn't read it that way.
Okay.
I don't think anybody's trying to poke any sort of fun at him for doing that.
Oh, yeah. I don't even necessarily fun. It just feels like maybe like he's not doing something that's mission critical.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. So it's slowing down. I don't know. Reports, analysis, things like that. But yeah, I respect the hell out of him for doing that.
So do I. But we got Berlin round two, and we go through the mission orientation, and Harding is not there. So we get Lieutenant Colonel Bennett, who throughout the episode, I came to like this guy actually a whole lot. Seems just very respectable. He does seem young. I think, I don't know. I won't judge that, but I respected his manner of leadership, I suppose I should say. And he also alluded to Harding had a trip to London this morning. So whether that is health related or maybe Harding got a promotion, I would like some further explanation in a future episode of what Harding is up to.
Yeah, because he became a pretty big, at least presence, you know, around, interrogation rooms, all that kind of stuff. So
I feel like he's been in every episode since episode two when he got the gig, but
we'll get closure on that for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, he lifts the screen and the mission map is right there. And one dude can't help himself. He's like, holy shit, that is the same mission as 2 days ago where we lost half of our planes. And I thought Bennett was going to like ream him out. And he's like, who said that? Well, you're absolutely right. And I wouldn't tell my men to fly in a mission that I myself would not fly in. So I'm going to be commanding the wing. So that's a big green check,
yeah,
if you ask me. But what else would they be hitting? It's another ball bearing factory. I was in Berlin.
Just going to say that. Oh, baby.
I'm just thinking to myself, this is Rosie's 25th. You've got to be kidding me.
I mean, he was never going to shy away from it, as we know. So I feel like I was confident, though, for sure.
Well, you know the drill. You guys worry about the guns. I'll worry about the plane.
Yeah, I think that we talked about it last episode of whether his little sabbatical was going to impact him as a leader in any way. Feels like it totally has. Feels like he's being very present and not necessarily like emotionally checking in on guys, but he's like taking the temperature of rooms, it feels like, more.
I would agree. In a way, he's being a bit more personable with just people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like him being the guy to go to the new guys at the barracks and be like, you know what, guys, like I'll be back. We'll go to the chow. And then saying, like, doing this little huddle before the missions, it all seems like has learned a lesson from that sabbatical slash retreat.
Was better podcasting on your part than mine, because I totally did not relate that like new recruit orientation scene to his experience last episode. So absolutely. Thank you for highlighting that.
I was keeping an eye out for it. So
we take to the air, and another Kroz narration tells us that their fortunes against the Luftwaffe have drastically increased with the introduction of the P-51 Mustang into the war, which I should have researched more, but I believe it was an American-made fighter jet, which they said escorted them for the entire duration of the mission to Berlin, so it could at least get them middle of Germany okay and bring them back. And I've highlighted it before, those fighter escorts had to have been an absolute game changer, not to mention having the cream of the crop fighter jet in the entire war, which Cross says the P-51 was hands down the best fighter.
Must have felt amazing, especially with the guys who know the difference. Was probably, can't even imagine the mental shift in having to go up again.
Oh yeah. And I think the cinematography, I don't know, the cameras, whatever they were doing, the CGI did a great job of just showing the fighters just soaring right past the bombers, even when they were just in formation. Like, these things look legit speed.
Yeah. It was interesting to watch the B-17s, the guns get involved in the fights. It just feels like, again, I know we've talked about it before of like, what would the friendly fire rate be? It feels like it would be exponentially higher with just adding in now our own level of fighters buzzing about going quickly. But I don't think you're worrying about that, honestly, when you're up in the air. You're just trying to protect yourself.
someone did yell out, "I can't get a shot on them." I'm not sure if that was because there was a wave of P-51s between them and the incoming German fighters, but yeah, I'm wondering if the philosophy shifted where they instructed the gunmen not to shoot until such a circumstance arose. I'm really not sure about that, but
it was, I think, notable that they see that group of the Luftwaffe and they're like, "I don't know who that is," because I guess the planes look similar enough and now they have the escorts. So they're expecting the potential that it's friendly bombers around them or fighter planes around them. So that would have been wild, too, of just waiting to get a little closer, because I mean, my eyes would not be good enough to be able to pick them out. So you're just kind of holding your breath a little bit.
Definitely. I just think that wave of incoming fighters, it would be terrifying if I was flying, but it really just looks cool coming at you in the air. But I think this is really the first scene where we get an intense shot of, like, I guess what you would call a dogfight, where it's just fighter jet versus fighter jet and the kind of two waves just collide in the middle. And Rosie even says, you know, the P-51s are going to punch us through. And kind of as the fight progresses, they do get over the IP. Bombardier take the plane and we get bombs away and they absolutely crush that particular ball bearing factory.
Yes, they did. It's just, I like watching the boo, 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 when they all like fall in unison, all of the bombs go down.
Obviously,
the destruction that's coming, but it just looks cool, the shots of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they had to nail the bombs away if they're doing this show, and I think they did. Point.
This was felt like the smoothest mission they've ever done.
I agree. I mean, I was waiting for catastrophe, and I'm not sure if they had the P-51s in the last mission to Berlin or not, or why this maybe the Germans weren't ready to be hit in quick succession at the capital, but
yeah. Although they did say that it's the 45th, someone else, there was like another element that kind of got crushed, it looked like, from the Luftwaffe.
Yeah, they did say that. I'm not sure how they fared, but okay.
That's what it said.
Yeah, there was another
maybe
group.
For our little squad, especially Rosie's plane, it was very smooth, but not everyone had that experience.
The 100th,
it was just like, and I'm sorry to step over, it was just like, oh, okay, we're over Berlin. And it was like, oh, okay.
Hey, it seemed good.
Drop that's them bangs. Let's go.
That's how we like these missions to go. And if any group could use a win, it's the 100th. So
yeah, that's for sure.
That is, I ain't asking questions. Rosie makes it back. Thorpe Abbott is absolutely electric. The boys are buzzing for him. We got this skibidi-bidi-bop all in full effect, man. We got the trumpets blaring. They are putting on a show for the boys. And okay, the dude telling the joke about how he was on the phone with his wife saying, "You got to repaint the ceiling," and she didn't say a damn thing because her mom was on the phone.
That was good.
That was nice.
That made me laugh a lot.
And then Kid has to put a damper on the party by saying they upped the end of tour requirements to 30 missions, and Rosie is in the clear, so he did his 25. Him and his crew are good. Anybody that gets caught in the middle was going to be upped to 28 missions, but any new recruit has to make 30 missions to get sent home, and everybody's just like, "You kidding me?"
Yeah, the one gentleman who's name I missed, same gentleman who called out the fact that they're doing the Berlin mission again,
yeah,
just kind of breaks. He has a breaking point. He stands up and he's like, "This is bullshit. How are you going to change the rules on us? They don't care about us. They just want us to die up there." And I mean, unless you're someone like Rosie, who seems cream of the crop, like is just very mission driven, understands the purpose of why they're fighting the war, and has that reinforced internally, it seems like every day he's like, "We're doing this, you have to see it through." I don't know how you could not feel like this other guy.
No, and that's like, I mean, everybody knows that only one or two people in recent memory have made it to 25. So it has to be common knowledge. The assumption is you're either dying or becoming a POW. I don't know why we haven't seen more people break like that, or if more people did. It's crazy. I guess I'm just emphasizing the respect for the people that did just continuously go up there and not ask question about it, because that is just It's crazy. Yeah,
it's unbelievable. And we did too. I don't know if we actually ended up mentioning it, but the Bloody Monday, someone who was on 24 went down. That was their 25th.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, the plane that you mentioned where like it went up and then just did the nosedive. I'm pretty sure they were talking that was another group that was on. That was their 25th mission.
Damn.
Yeah.
That is the worst thing I've heard all day.
So again, that just is another layer to how they're all feeling in this moment. It's just like unbelievable.
Well, we do get this Cross narration that essentially just sums it up. The 100th took a heavy toll in Berlin, and it became obvious that dropping bombs wasn't enough. We had to completely destroy the Luftwaffe. And that kind of springboards us into our final scene of the episode, which is Rosie deciding to re-up his tour. And he's in the office with our new Lieutenant Colonel Bennett. And this is another point of admiration for Bennett, because he puts all the cards on the table and is kind of like, hey, man, I get it. But if anyone deserves to go home, it's you. And Rosie responds how we've expected Rosie to respond. He's just like, I couldn't imagine having my place taken by a complete rookie. It's just like you said, Kobe mentality, job's not finished. And that's how our boy's wired.
And he's totally thinking, too, it's weakening the element if you replace me with a new recruit. Like, we get worse as a fighting unit. Why would I agree to that? Just what a man. I feel like it would be so hype to see him come back and be like, I'm not fucking leaving, boys. Like,
I mean, I just hope he lives. That's the thing I'm hoping for more than anything as we come into our final two episodes. But
I think for sure he's my favorite character now. There was a YouTube comment in maybe episode 2 or 3 that said, I can't wait for Rosie Rosenthal to come, easily the best character. And I was like, we'll see. Like, you know, Buck and Bucky are pretty chill. And now it's just, he's just the fucking man.
Nah, I'm a big fan of Rosie as well. I don't know. Prime Buck Levin was might still be my guy.
That's true.
I mean, he's especially still.
You haven't seen Dune 2 yet. Because Austin Butler's.
Get
Austin
off your high horse there, buddy. Less than a week.
Austin Butler, you haven't
seen Dune Part 2 yet. Yeah, I was waiting for you to insert that into the conversation. Yeah,
because
Austin
I offered
Butler
you
show.
A ticket 2 weeks in advance, and you said you weren't going to watch the first one in time. So you had the opportunity.
And truth be told, I did finish the first one in time, but, you know, I will see it in my leisure, preferably in an IMAX theater.
Well, you get to see Buck Clevin in a different element.
Yeah, that's a very different element from everything I've seen.
Yes.
But let's conclude this. When Rosie comes to Bennett and it's just like, nah, I kind of understand what the deal is and I want to re-up, Bennett says, okay, you should also know that we've gotten word that the philosophy of the Air Force has shifted. Okay. We, like Kroz in the narration said, we've understood that we have to completely annihilate the Luftwaffe before we can even contemplate an invasion of the mainland. And the way we're going to do that, now that we know we have the P-51s that are better than anything that the Luftwaffe can throw at us, we're going to use the bombers as bait to draw them in the air where we can just take them down with the P-51s. And he repeats that one sentence. That's the mission. Bait. And Rosie still says, I'm in.
That's just wild to me. Like we've said before, I've mentioned multiple times, I have a fear of flying. This is just insane to me with the deliberate knowledge that you are bait. And still agreeing to it is just, I mean, obviously, it goes without saying that he's a better man than I am, but yeah, he is clearly a better man than probably 99.9% of people out there.
Yeah, and it's also been established he's Jewish, so maybe he feels more compelled and a sense of duty to kind of play his part in this war. I think there is that. He doesn't want to put himself in a situation for survivor's guilt. You know, he, even though he has earned the right to go home, he still feels the need to be there. I don't know. It's just, it's insane. And all the respect in the world to Rosie in this episode here.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
I don't know. That is our episode. I don't really have too much else to say. That was kind
of he gets a command as well.
He did. He is our new commanding officer of the 350th, which, if I'm not mistaken, was either Buck or Bucky's old.
They've thrown a lot of numbers at us in that
I
way.
Know. I know. It's so many numbers, yeah, dude.
Because are we like the sixth, the 100 bomber group of the sixth Air Force of, I don't know
it's
how it
the
all
eighth
breaks
Air
down.
Force. The I eighth believe.
Air Force. Not really entirely sure how it all breaks down, but they mentioned General Doolittle, right? It's just Doolittle who.
He was the one that is changing the philosophy to use the bombers as bait.
Yeah. Saw an interesting comment that was saying that they hope the show doesn't just leave it at that. Apparently he, as like an individual, it's unfair to only paint him as he was sending planes up there as bait type of deal. So I'm interested to see if they flesh that out or if I just have to look into it myself.
Per my episode one notes, Buck Cleven was commander of the 350th.
There you go.
So I like that a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
That's hopefully their fates are different, though.
Yeah, hopefully.
I don't know. I get the feeling this was kind of a bridge episode, and I do find myself hoping for a return to kind of the intensity and the passion of maybe the previous five or so episodes. And again, this wasn't by no means bad. It was just a very different episode, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, that's well said. Cool. I don't really know if I have a ton to add at all.
Cool.
I'm feeling good, though. Two episodes left. Technically a bonus episode for us because we went through a lot of it thinking it was only eight, but nine just feels like such an odd number, but I mean, but a weird number. And yeah, but we got two more of these, two more episodes, two more pod episodes. I'm very much looking forward to both of them.
Love it. Well, let's leave it at that then. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, YouTube, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
Cool.
Sweet.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.